feet and daylight unto my path. And a light unto, a light unto my path, my path.
Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. On our last Searchlight program, we looked at a powerful story in 1 Samuel 25. It is the story of David and his confrontation with a man named Nabal. The name Nabal means fool, and we saw this as he lived up to his name. David sought some assistance from Nabal and was rebuked by him. This made David mad, and he was going to attack Nabal until a very godly lady stepped into the picture. Nabal's wife came with grace and humility and stopped David from killing her husband. David relented, and 10 days later, Nabal died. John shared with us that this is a great lesson for us. David was going to take matters into his own hand, but was convinced by Abigail to allow the Lord to take over the situation, and he did. And David even ended up marrying Abigail. We also saw that Abigail is a good role model for us. Sometimes people are in difficult relationships, but we need to do the same thing that Abigail did when she was married to a fool. She simply did what she was supposed to do and was the godly person that she was supposed to be. And God honored that and blessed her. Pastor John has some more things that he would like to share with us about this story, so let's now join him once again.
Something else I want you to see before we move on, very quickly, very importantly. For you Bible students especially, this warms my heart. Because you see, Abigail, the bride of King David, David who is about to be king, she's a picture of you, she's a picture of me. If you have pencil and paper out, you might want to jot these things down. If these things interest you, they do me. Because in these stories, I want to see, Lord, I understand there's practical things for us in our present marriages, but there's something more important than that. And that is, it's a picture of you and me, that we have good understanding and we are of a beautiful countenance because of God's grace. We're robed in his righteousness. He's given us the understanding from his word. Watch this. 10 things or so I want you to jot down or think through or be aware of at least. Abigail is you. Abigail is me. Abigail is us. We are called the bride of what? We're his bride. We are the bride of Christ. That's you. That's me. That's us. We're engaged to a greater king than David was, the King of Kings, Jesus Christ. First of all, notice with me first that Abigail was yoked to Nabal. Number one, we too were yoked to fools. The fools of ourself, our sin, and Satan. She was stuck with an idiot. So were you. So was I. We were stuck with ourselves. We were idiots. Do you know that? You were a total idiot. I was a double loser. We thought we knew a lot. We thought we could steer our own ship, plot our own course, succeed in our own energy. What did we find? It was foolish. Yoked to Nabal. We were yoked to ourselves, the foolishness of our own sin, or the foolishness of ourself, or the foolishness of Satan. Secondly, she was barren. We too were barren. She had no children with Nabal. She was barren. We were yoked to our own foolish self. We too had no children. That is, there was no fruit from our lives. There was no real prolific production of import eternally. We were barren. Number three, she heard, though, of the doom. She heard of the doom. She heard the word. Verse 17, it says to us, as she heard the word from the messengers of David, Now therefore know and consider what thou wilt do, for evil is determined against our master. When the messengers of David came, she heard the word that, hey, there was doom headed her way and her family's way. So like us, we were yoked to our stupid selves. We were barren. And we heard the word of doom. That is, you're headed for hell, quite frankly. You're doomed. Because the wages of sin is what? Death. We were headed for damnation. Some laugh at us for believing in that. Some say, oh, that's foolish, that hellfire and damnation stuff. But we heard the word. Jesus talked more about hell than he did about heaven for a reason. Hell is a real place. She heard the word that she was doomed. The whole family was about to be doomed. So what does she do? She's yoked to Nabal. She's barren. She hears the word of her own destruction, her family's too, which causes her in verse 23, she puts her face in the dust. There's David, and she fell before David on her face, bowed herself to the ground. She humbles herself before David. That's what happened to you and me. We heard the word of doom. We fell on our face. We stood up and walked forward. We came to the baptismal water. We raised our hand. We fell on our knee. We admitted to somebody that was talking to us, hey, that's me. I've been wrong, you see. She fell on her face in humility. She confessed, verse 24, upon me, my Lord, upon me, let this iniquity be. She confessed, it's my problem. She didn't say, well, I'm a good person. It's Nabal. He's the real culprit. He's the real. And some people don't blame me. I don't need to be forgiven. I don't need salvation. I'm a good person. They'll never be saved. Abigail was one who, yes, I realize I'm doomed. And I humble myself before my King David. And I confess it's my sin. I dropped the ball. I should have been cognizant of what was taking place, aware of what was coming down. Upon me, let this iniquity be. The sixth thing, she says, verse 28, I pray thee, forgive the trespass of thy handmaid. She sought forgiveness. So she humbles herself. She confesses that she's to blame, and she asks forgiveness. Forgive me, she says, forgive the trespass of thy handmaid. And then, number 7, verse 28 goes on, she's persuaded of David's goodness. So she's confessed her own sinfulness. She's humbled herself at David's feet. Now she's persuaded of David's goodness, verse 28. She says, for the Lord will certainly make you a sure house, because you fight the battles of the Lord, and evil has not been found in you all of your days. You are special, she says to David. That happens to us. We confess our sin, we're on our face, and we say, but Lord, thou art worthy. There's no spot or blemish in you. No fault is found in you, Lord. You are worthy. Persuaded of David's goodness, so too we've been persuaded of Jesus' greatness and goodness too. And verse 29 and 30, she exalted in his destiny. That is, she realized that he was going to go on to greatness. You are sought after, verse 29. You are being hunted down, but you shall be bound in the bundle of life. Jesus was sought after, hunted down, nailed to a cross, but he was bound in the bundle of life. 3 days later, he what? Rose again from the dead. And it shall come to pass, verse 30 goes on to say, when the Lord shall have done to my Lord according to all the good thing that he hath spoken concerning thee, he shall have appointed thee ruler over Israel. Number 9, she, like the dying thief on the cross, says, remember me when that happens. When you come into your kingdom, verse 31, when you make it into your kingdom, when you are ruler over Israel, verse 30, last phrase of verse 31, I know we're going quickly, but we're going quickly. Verse 31, remember your handmaiden, remember me. What did the thief on the cross say? The one that did believe, remember me today. And Jesus did remember him. So too, that's what she says. And then notice this. Number 10, verse 35, David, this future king, the king to be, David, a picture of Jesus, obviously, granted her request and accepted her person and said, go in peace. She humbled herself before him. She confessed her sin. She expressed her belief in his destiny. And he looks at her and he says, verse 35, go in peace. I've heard your voice and accepted your person. The real issue in salvation is not that we accept the Lord. That's nothing. I mean, I understand the phrase, but the real mystery is the Lord accepts you and the Lord accepts me. And that's what David does here. He says, I've heard your voice. Whoever calls upon the name of the Lord shall be what? He will in no wise cast out any who call on him, who believe in him, who come to him. I've heard your voice. Go in peace. Hey, we are no longer condemned by the Lord or in a war against the Lord, but we have the peace of the Lord. We have peace with God through Jesus Christ. How wonderful. And finally, number 11 is, and I like this, he called for her as his bride right before he begins reigning over Israel. I like that. We're getting to the place in our story, going through this with David, where he's about to become king very shortly. But suffice it to say, right before he begins his reign, he calls her to be his bride. Let me tell you something. Jesus is about to reign in Jerusalem. But before he reigns and rules in Jerusalem, he's calling us. He's sending for us, just like David sent for her. Notice there was no option given. Notice there was no option. David would like you to come. Think about it. David sent his messengers and said, pick her up and bring her back. I like that. That's the rapture. The Lord is going to come. He's not going to say, well, are you interested in coming? How you doing? What do you think? He knows we're dumb. He's just going to say, come, boom. And he's going to grab us by the nape of the neck. He's going to pull us up. He's going to take us to heaven to be his wife for 7 years, honeymooning there until he comes and rules and reigns, as David did in Jerusalem, and we will be his bride. What a grand and glorious day that's going to be. Well, quickly, the Ziphites, they came to Saul. The Ziphites, we encountered them before in chapter 23. The Ziphites, they were the guys that finked on David previously. The Ziphites were the guys that let Saul know, in chapter 23, David's hanging out in our territory. These guys were rat finks. They were tattletales. They were, you know, the, oh my goodness, the Nellies from, what was that show years ago? Yeah, Little House on the Prairie. Yeah, the Nellies, if you could remember. That's who these guys were. And they were going, they sent word to Saul, David hides himself in the hills of Hakaliah. He's over here again. He's in our territory. We have word. We've seen him and his men, you see. Well, Saul, you see, Saul arose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having 3,000 chosen men of Israel with him to seek David in the wilderness of Ziph. Now, we do not know what David was thinking here. He had already been in this place previously, the woods, the wilderness of Ziph. And these guys finked on him before. So why is he going back to that place again when they're going to do the same thing as they did previously? What's he thinking? Now, interestingly enough, in the story, in our text, we don't have any clue of what David is thinking, but we do have revelation about where his heart was at. It's given to you in Psalm 54. I'll read it to you very quickly. It's only a few verses. But this psalm was written at this time, when David was back in the area of Ziph. Listen to what David's heart was. Save me, O God, by thy name. Judge me by thy strength. Hear my prayer, O God, and give ear to the words of my mouth. For strangers are risen up against me. Oppressors seek after my soul. They have not set God before them. But behold, God is my helper. The Lord is with them that uphold my soul, and he shall reward evil unto mine enemies. Cut them off in thy truth. I will freely sacrifice unto thee. I will praise thy name, O Lord, for it is good. For he hath delivered me out of all trouble, and mine eye hath seen his desire upon mine enemies. Psalm 54. This was written, as the psalm title says, at a time when David was in Ziph and he was thinked on by the men of Ziph. So we don't know what his thought was. We can say, David, why would you go back there? Other options were before you strategically. Why would you go back to that place where you encountered trouble previously? Well, why do we go back to the same places where we had troubles before? How often do we look at each other and say, what were you thinking? Why did you go back there? Why did you do that again? Why did you try it? You failed before. It was a mess when you did it previously. Why would you do it again? And there's really no reasons to explain these things, but what does matter is where a person's heart is, you see. My thoughts might get messed up, and my thoughts might not make sense. Men are curious about our thoughts. God is more interested in our hearts. And David was writing poetry to the Lord, inspired by the Lord, offering praises before the Lord, even while he was doing something which logically makes little sense. Well, he goes back to this place of Ziph, but his heart was tender towards the Lord, even though his actions were questionable at best. Saul hears about this because these guys thinked on him, and Saul gets 3,000 men together to seek him in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul then pitched in the hill of Hakilah, which is in that area. David abode in the wilderness. He saw Saul was coming after him into the wilderness. David therefore sent out spies and understood that Saul was come in very deed. Stop there and note this. Last time David and Saul had an encounter was there in the previous chapter, actually chapter 25 at En Gedi, or 24 actually. David had a chance to lop off his head. David didn't do so. And Saul said, oh, David, I've done wrong in chasing you down. I've been the wrong one. David, you're a greater man, a better man than I am. David here now hears word Saul's coming. And it seems as though from our text that David didn't really believe that Saul was leading the way. I mean, here comes the army. But David believed evidently that Saul meant what he said back at En Gedi, when David had a chance to lop off his head, but didn't, you see. It would seem as though David said, I don't believe that Saul would lead this army. So an army is coming to get him, but David doesn't believe it would be Saul until David sends out spies, and then he understood, verse 4, that it was Saul indeed. It really was Saul. I like this about David because it shows us something about his heart. Even a guy like Saul that was chucking spears at him, causing problems for him, felt hatred toward him, yet David still wanted to believe the best about Saul. I spared his life at En Gedi. He knows that. He told me that I was a better man than him. He's not going to really be after me. But notice this. Although he didn't want to believe it, he still was wise enough to find out the facts about it. He sent out spies. I like that balance in David, you see. Wise, wise leadership, a wise man. Didn't want to believe the evil, but wasn't going to be naive either and jeopardize his men, his army. So he sent out spies, and then he realized it is Saul. Also, this shows me something else. Saul could have been sincere. Oh, David, you're right. You spared my life. I've been wrong here. I'm not going to bother you anymore. See, people make promises, don't they? People make statements. People make declarations. I'm not going to do this again. I'm not going to go there ever again. I'm not going to think those things or say those words. And they have great intentions. But the problem is the flesh. See, people make these promises of reformation. They go to 12-step programs, or they go to counseling clinics, or they write things on note cards and tape it to their mirrors. I'm going to be nice, you see, whatever it might be. But the reality is, although the spirit might be willing, the flesh is weak. And the issue isn't reformation, the issue is regeneration. You got to be born again. Jesus put it this way, without me, you can do nothing. So I don't care how good the program is. I don't care how sincere the people might be. I don't care how hard one tries. Ultimately, the flesh wells up again. And Saul may have been sincere. Oh, David, I'm not going to go after you anymore. You're a better man than me. David wanted to believe that. But Saul had no ability to keep it, because Saul himself was turning his back on the Lord, was no longer walking with the Lord, and was not drawing strength from the Lord. And thus, even if Saul had been sincere, the reality is he was incapable or unable of controlling his flesh. Let that be a word for you and me, any of us who think, well, I can just get these dynamic Tony Robbins tapes. That's what I'll do. Or I'm just going to go through this program or go to that clinic and I'll solve my problem. I'll reform my life. Well, it doesn't work that way. You must be born again. And even when you are born again, hey, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the desires of the flesh. But apart from him, I can do nothing, even though I might intend to, or promise to, or whatever it might be. It's not going to really happen. So David sends out these spies, and the guys come back and say, David, it is Saul. So David arose and came to the place where Saul pitched. Saul is there, pitched with his 3,000 chosen men. Saul is on the move, out to get him, out to do him in. And David does something here with his nephew. He sneaks into the camp, David himself, and one of his men who happens to be a nephew of David's relationally, and they have an opportunity to kill Saul, just like they did back in the previous story there at chapter 24 at En-Gedi. This time, though, David doesn't cut the robe of Saul's garment, nor does David lop off Saul's head, but he does something which is very profound and significant, and we'll talk about that next week. Here's the good news for tonight. Here's the thing that I pray that you'll go away with. You need the Lord, me too. Without him, we're just not going to do even the good things that we want to. You need the Lord, or it's not going to work. Walk with him. Stay close to him. Walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lusts of the flesh, the Bible says. But apart from him, we're going to stumble. We're going to fall, no matter how sincere we might be. Walk in the Spirit. Why? Because one day, not very far away, our King is going to call for us, his bride, and we're going to be snatched up, and we're going to heaven. We're going to be there. And you and me, see, we know who we were married to before, ourselves. We look in the mirror. I'm wonderful. Fool. We were married to our own stupid, foolish, navel self, you see. But we heard the word in our barren condition, the emptiness of our soul. We heard the word that gloom and doom was coming our way. The wages of sin is death, you see. And we had the grace of God upon our lives to be wise enough to fall on our face before him, acknowledging his destiny, his goodness, his greatness, and saying, I'm a sinner. I need you, Lord. And he heard our confession, and he said, I have heard your voice. Go in peace. And he accepts our person. And one day, we're going to be whisked away to heaven. Good news.
That is great news. Our destiny is sure because of our great bridegroom, Jesus Christ. We're going to heaven. This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com.
We would like to remind you that on the Searchlight website, you can find Pastor John's teachings through the entire Bible. You can listen to the audio or watch the video of any of these teachings from the website at any time for no charge. The Searchlight website address is johncorson.com.
Searchlight is an independent ministry that is not financially supported by any church or organization. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.